Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Interfaith Alliance's audio seminar on the IRS, House of Worship, and the Elections. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, but later we will conduct a question-and-answer session, which instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance, you may press star then zero, and an operator will assist you. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded for replay. And now I'd like to turn the conference over to your host, the Reverend Welton Lee.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Interfaith Alliance's National Phone Seminar on Do's and Don'ts for Houses of Worship amid the partisan political campaigns of an election year. I am Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, and I also am an active pastor of a local congregation. Before I turn this call over to our guest from the IRS, let me give you just a bit of background on why the Interfaith Alliance organized this call. The importance and influence of religious leaders' messages on political issues can hardly be overstated. Those of us who serve as religious leaders conscientiously include in our most sacred moments and pronouncements, worship, prayers, meditations, and the like, that which we believe is most important in life. If we omit politics from the subjects to which we turn in such moments, people will assume either that politics is not important enough to be included in discussions of matters of faith, or worse still, that religion has nothing to say about politics. Of course, you know that those would be wrong conclusions. For religious leaders, responsible generally, and preaching, or any form of religious discourse specifically, can no more ignore the great issues of the day than it can ignore the great texts and truths of the scriptures of our respective traditions. While addressing political issues is an imperative for religious leaders, such speaking is not. To do this work with integrity requires careful preparation and constant sensitivity. Sensitivity to the difference between elaborating religious principles, altering personal opinions, and taking partisan political positions. Frankly, today, preaching on political issues is more difficult than ever because of widespread confusion regarding the proper relationship between religion and politics. Religious discourse takes place within a context saturated with attempts at the religification of politics by some religious leaders and the politicization of religion by some politicians. The purpose of this call today is to learn from the IRS just what the guidelines are for appropriate activities by houses of worship in an election year. I know that many of you may have questions with regard to sermons, other concerns. We will get to those questions momentarily after the presentation. And then at the end of the clip, we have time, I will share with you 8 suggestions that you may find helpful as you prepare your own sermon, meditation, or homily, encouraging your members to participate in the democratic process. These are based on my experience of speaking pulpits and local congregations for over 40 years. These suggestions will be placed on the website of the Interfaith Alliance, and you can find them there, interfaithalliance.org. Now, I know we also have members of the media with us on the call. We would simply ask that at the end, when we open the lines for brief questions, that you keep the questions directed at either our guest or at me. If you have additional follow-up questions for us or for any religious leader that speaks during the call, certainly then direct those questions to William Blake in the Interfaith Alliance's Media Relations Office. That number is 202-639-6370. Again, 202-639-6370. You are certainly also free to contact the Media Relations Office at the IRS. Now, let me introduce our guest. Judy Kendall is tax law specialist for the IRS. She's based here in Washington, D.C. You should also know that the IRS has held several of these forums on its own, and you can find a full script and wide slide presentation on their website at www.irs.gov/EO. www.irs.gov/EO. The Interfaith Alliance also has a guide for houses of worship in an election year that also focuses on the do's and don'ts. You can find that on our website, which I've already told you about, www.interfaithalliance.org. Ms. Kendall, thank you for joining us today, and we hear you now gladly.
Thank you. Our session today is about the prohibition on political campaign activity by organizations recognized as Section 501c3 tax-exempt organizations, which does include churches. Let's start by talking about the specific language in the code that gives rise to the prohibition. The gist of the provision was added by amendment during the Senate floor debate over the Revenue Act of 1954. This amendment was proposed by Texas Senator Lyndon B. Johnson, who was then the Senate Majority Minority Leader. The provision was accepted and became part of the code. There's no legislative history explaining Senator Johnson's reasons for proposing the amendment, but nonetheless, the provision has been in the code for over half a century now. And to the extent Congress has revisited it over the years, it has in fact strengthened it. Most recently, in 1987, Congress amended the language to clarify that the prohibition also applies to statements opposing candidates. So, the current language applicable to Section 501c3 organizations reads, an organization does not participate in or intervene in, including the publishing or distributing of statements, any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. Note that the prohibition includes publishing and distributing statements. So the distribution by a Section 501c3 organization of biased material prepared by a third party could jeopardize the organization's tax-exempt status. Now, an important point to remember is that the prohibition applies to intervention in political campaigns and not all activity that might generally be described as political. For example, Section 501c3 organizations may engage in a limited amount of lobbying activity, which is defined as the attempt to influence legislation. Now, there are other rules that govern lobbying activities of Section 501c3 organizations. However, we won't have time to go into those today. Now, let me stress here that the prohibition applies to Section 501c3 organizations as a condition for exemption. It's not directed just at churches or any other particular type of organization, and it is not a freedom of speech or free exercise of religion. It is a requirement imposed by Congress for the privilege of exempt from federal income tax under the specific subsection of the code. Now, this does not contain a broad test as to what constitutes political campaign intervention. So the IRS considers all the facts and circumstances of a particular situation, striving to interpret and apply the laws enacted by Congress, the regulations written by the Treasury Department, and the decisions reached by the courts. To illustrate the facts and circumstances test, I'll discuss several scenarios from Fact Sheet 2006-17, which the IRS released this past February. Although I'm not...
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. There are some technical difficulties. Please stand by. Pardon me, the Reverend is now rejoining.
Pardon us for going away. We don't know why that happened. Evidently someone didn't like the fact sheet that Ms. Kendall was discussing. Ms. Kendall, I'm sorry for the interruption, but pick up where you were, and we continue to listen.
Okay. What I was saying was that I will be illustrating the facts and circumstances test, discussing scenarios from Fact Sheet 2006-17, which we released this past February. Although I'm not covering all the examples from the fact sheet. You can download the fact sheet from the exempt organization's page of the IRS website, and that's, again, at www.irs.gov/EO, and the fact sheet number is 2000-17. Now, first, to understand the prohibition, you must realize that it extends beyond simple candidate endorsements or contributions to political campaign funds. Now, these acts are clearly campaign intervention, as are written or verbal public statements made by or on behalf of an organization in favor of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. The scenarios I will be discussing involve the tougher call, where all the facts and circumstances must be considered to determine whether the organization has intervened in a political campaign. Let's look first at activities some organizations engage in to encourage people to participate in the electoral process by educating voters, registering voters.